podcast here at the Seattle Times. I'm Mariners beat writer Ryan Divish. I am coming to you live from our palatial and just magnificent estate here in Peoria, Arizona, the Peoria Bureau of the Seattle Times. Now it's just like this little two-bedroom apartment that they rent for us while we're down here. Little hiatus from the podcast for a week. I went and visited my little nieces in Denver. Sorry, I had to take steal a little bit of time, see the little brats. They're great. And so I wanted to get down and see them. So we did no podcast. I wrote a whole bunch of features last week, or previews. I guess it wasn't features, but more analysis, just kind of about the Mariners, the lineup, the bullpen, the starting rotation as always. And then just kind of about a little bit about the overall skepticism going into the season, because I believe that's real. I think there's a very wait and see or even cynical attitude towards the Mariners, largely because of their inactivity to get starting pitching. I think everybody likes the moves to get the lineup a little bit better, but the lack of moves to address pitching and other aspects have frustrated people, because I think they know how difficult it would be for the Mariners to make the postseason with the current team they have. As of that we're recording, I'm recording this about Tuesday night. It's about 11:15 or so. And I talked with Larry Stone earlier, so we'll get to that. Not really a ton of news today. The Mariners released their media guide earlier, on PDF, and an intrepid reporter, sports reporter named Chris Chancellor. I'm not certain which publication he works for now, but I know him a little bit when he used to help write for the TNT, and I think he worked in Port Orchard or Port Angeles. He noticed that on a couple of lines, instead of Safeco for these all-time records against teams, the word Proliance was in there, as in Proliance Field or something, possibly the Mariners' new naming rights to Safeco Field, the naming rights for the field end after the season, and the Mariners are in process of finding a new sponsor. It's not going to be Proliance Field. I talked with some Mariners officials. Proliance was a company that they did have some initial talks with, part of the group of companies that showed interest in it, but it's not Proliance Field. So it was a little bit of a mistake or a typo in the process that never really got edited and fixed. Which, you know what, as many mistakes as I make and in my copy and stuff, I'm not going to give the Mariners any grief, because that was a heck of a lot more pages and a lot more information than what I deal with. And I sometimes can't even get a 140 character tweet right without making a mistake. So that was most of the news today. I have a personal announcement to make. This may affect the coverage a little bit. I have not joined The Athletic, unlike everybody else in baseball. So you're safe. You're stuck with me for a little while longer. I don't know how long, as long as I don't, you know, irritate my bosses and they want to keep me around. But no, a lot of my friends have left for The Athletic. I don't know what their plans are for Seattle, but I have not joined them. So you will have me for the baseball season, as far as I know. I was on at the fields today a little bit. You know, there are players there throwing, working out. James Paxton threw a bullpen today. Tony Zick threw a bullpen today. I didn't see them pitch, but I talked to Paxton a little bit. He's thrown four bullpens. He got here on February 1st. Something I mentioned with Larry. He got here on February 1st. He's thrown four bullpens already. And he'll throw on Thursday on the first workout day. And then I think he said he'll throw two bullpens and go to live BP and then get into games or whatever. So he looks good. Zick has a huge mountain man beard. I saw David Phelps the other day. Obviously, a lot of these guys are rolling in. So tomorrow, Wednesday, is the first full pitchers and catchers report. There isn't going to be a whole lot going on. But hopefully we'll have a little bit of news to give you something. Obviously, we wanted to have this podcast recorded and ready for something to go that morning of. So let's get to Larry Stone, and we'll talk a little baseball. Well, Let's welcome in Larry Stone, who is just returning to his palatial state in the Bellevue area after what happened, Larry. Larry, explain to everybody what happened tonight.
Well, do I have to?
Yes.
We had our weekly trivia game without the massive brain power of Ryan Divish, because he's in Peoria, of course, and our streak of victory ended. But I don't know if that's coincidental. I don't know if there's a coincidental or there's a relationship to you not being there and us losing. But you can determine that. But we finished a strong second, but we did not win, and that's very sad.
I want to point out that the two times I have not been there, you guys have not won. You tied for first and lost in the tiebreaker one time when I was not there, and then you lost tonight.
That's true. Well, I've been there every time, and so I've been part of every victory. Can I say that?
Yeah, yes, you have. I mean, if they have random 90s TV trivia, that's usually my strong suit. What was the worst question you didn't get to, or what the toughest question you didn't
well,
get?
Well, the one that killed us was, name the four of the five women artists who have sold $150 million, and we only got one.
Who did you get right?
We usually nail those. We got Madonna.
Yeah, you didn't guess Celine Dion, Whitney Houston, or
Mariah Carey.
Yes.
And the other one was Rihanna. I think we went with Barbara Streisand, Taylor Swift, and Dolly Parton. We went a little too old school, I think.
Yeah, I can't believe you went Babs. Wow.
Yeah, because I mean, she's made about 100 different albums, so I figured you put them all together, she had to have sold $150 million. But we were all kicking ourselves, particularly Condota. He thought he was in agony when we saw that.
Yeah,
and the other one that killed us was, what was the name of John F. Kennedy's wife, Jr. John F. Kennedy Jr.'s wife. And we just, it was on the tip of our tongues, but we just couldn't get it. And would you have known that one?
Was it Carolyn Bessette?
It was Carolyn Bessette. You looked it up. We sent that
yes.
to you.
I knew her first name was Carolyn. I couldn't remember if it was Klein or Bessette. So if I would have said Carolyn, do you think that would have helped?
Maybe. We probably would have thought you were thinking of Caroline Kennedy, his sister.
Yeah, that's, well, yeah, but, yeah, so. So anyways, I'm sorry you guys didn't win at all.
Yeah, but there was a free pitcher of beer for finishing second, so it wasn't a total loss.
No, that's always good. all right, before we get going any further, we have to have a moment of silence. In honor of Salty Senorita closing here in Peoria, Arizona. So a moment of silence here. Okay.
All right. Did you see my suggestion that
to the snarky sports writer?
Yeah, that you and I could open up, we could buy it and reopen it and call it the snarky sports writer instead of the salty senorita.
I think we could run it better than the last people that were running it. For people who don't know, the Salty Senorita is a bar that sits adjacent to the San Diego Padres portion of the Peoria Sports Complex. You can actually watch some of the Padres workouts from the bar. It's an indoor, but mostly outdoor bar with a sand beach volleyball court, a fire pit, which I almost fell in one time. They have, you know, cornhole, all these outdoor games. It's a big area, and the Mariners do their Cactus League report show there during the week. And it's a pretty famous bar. A lot of the players would go there. I had some interesting conversations with Eric Bedard there. But, you know, it's kind of a place. It was called the Monastery before. It was a place where you could bring your own steaks and grill them. But now it's closing down, or at least it has been closed. There was rumors that it might open for spring, but we drove by today. It looked on hard times.
Well, it's an odd location because if you don't know it's there, you don't pass it on any street or anything. It's kind of like tucked down in away from the main street, and almost like it's almost part of the complex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Padres complex. So, you know, every time I go there for they always had me on for the show on 710, and it was always jam packed. Although there was always the sobering moment, I'd go in there and think, "Oh man, there's so many people here." And then, whatever Mariners player was the guest would finish and then leave, And then, like, the crowd would clear out, and there'd be 10 people left when they had me on, because they always save the writer for last.
Yeah, they should make the writer the go players. First. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, I know. It's very humbling when everyone gets up and leaves right when you're about to go on.
I'm always surprised they let me back on that show, because I go on there and, you know, I just try and make people laugh, and then I'm pretty critical of the team. So I'm always surprised they actually ever invite me onto that show. For people that are curious, they aren't going to do it from a bar because of so many night games this year, and a lot of them are on Wednesdays. They're going to do it as part of their pregame show, I think, on Wednesday. So it'll be from the booth and not from a place where people can go in public, which is disappointing, I think, for a lot of people, because they could go get autographs from the players and meet the players up close and personal. So that is a disappointment.
Yeah, there were a lot of people who would do that. The other thing I remember is it was always freezing. You know, I think there's a misconception that in spring training it's always hot and warm. At night in February it gets darn cold Arizona. And I remember that Shannon would bring and Kevin Kremen would bring their own jackets for the guests, because they often came and didn't realize it was going to be so cold, because it's an outdoor bar, so you're outdoors in the cold and wind, and there's many a time that I was saved by the jacket that Shannon or Kevin would hand me while, you know, the 10 minutes I was on.
I will tell you, like, when it got to late in the year, though, like in March when games are really going and stuff, that was the place to go on a Friday and Saturday night. That place was packed. They'd have a DJ outdoors. It was a crazy party. Like I said, the day that Eric Bedard did the famous five questions deal.
Yeah.
He was there. He did the famous five questions, you know, and John Hickey goes, "Why would we only get five?" And he goes, "That's one." we went. So my friend Todd Millis from the News Tribune and Dusty Lane from the News Tribune, they were down there, and they came down for a couple days just to hang out. It was my first year on the beat, you know, and so they came down to just check on me, but mostly to go out and drink beers. So I met them at the Salty Senorita after I finished filing that night and covering everything. So I walk in, I sit down at their table, I turn and look at my shoulder. Who's sitting at the table next to me? Eric Bedard. He looks at me, he goes, and he let out a curse word. And I said, "Look," I said, "you know, this is my rule with players in bar." I said, "As long as you don't start a fight or an incident, I don't care." I said, and as my buddy Todd yelled across the table, "He's more likely to start the fight in here." And I was like, "Thanks, Todd." and so I just said, I don't care. It's just whatever happened today. I don't want to talk about it." And he's like, "Good." And then he left. And then infamously, I was in there one night with Jerry Brewer and Bob Condotta, and Uni Eski Betancourt showed up, and Uni had to, you know, Uni liked his cocktails a little bit, and he was out there dancing and having a good time. And I just remember he was leaving with several Mariners players at the time, although Uni wasn't with the Mariners. I think he was with the Royals. But he was leaving a bunch of Mariners players. He ran up and gave me and Jerry hugs, and he told me in English, "I miss Seattle." And I was like, wow. So, you know, it's too bad about Salties, but maybe they'll bring it back sometime.
Yeah, we'll see. I do remember when it was the Monastery too, so it's changed hands a few times, and it wouldn't surprise me if it opened up with a new theme and a new name maybe by the time we get there next spring.
You know what place still hasn't got a tenant is that one sports bar that we used to go, McDuffie's or whatever.
Oh yeah.
And that was a really cool sports bar back in the day, but they had that incident where the guy got stabbed outside of there after the Super Bowl party one year, and they've never really had an anchor tenant in there since, and it's emptied out right now too.
Yeah, that whole complex there, it's ever-changing as well. You know, it's always interesting to come back and see what new restaurants are there and what's closed, what's opened. And because we end up going out to eat almost every meal, so that's important. I mean, you've already done what, In-N-Out and
Leo's Hawaiian Barbecue, yes.
Well, save all the good stuff for when I get there on February 28th.
Yes, yes. All right, so we got our moment of silence in. Just real quickly, I'm going to mention it on the lead-in, which I haven't recorded yet, but you saw that tweet today from former sports writer Chris Chancellor about seeing ProLiance in the name. Did you think, oh, my God, it's going to be ProLiance Stadium next year or anything like that?
Sure I did. I'm like everybody else. I mean, for a second, until you checked with the Mariner people and they said it wasn't it, but you know, it was awfully curious that it was in the media guide under like for a couple of teams, the Red Sox and the Orioles, where it was giving the all-time record, and it had Kingdome and the Red, and said ProLiance, which is where Safeco usually is.
Yes.
And it was for two teams. So, you know, that's awfully curious. Makes you wonder if there was at some point they thought it was going to be ProLiance, but you know, you just don't make that up. But you know, they didn't they assure you that that's not what it's going to end up being?
Yeah, no. So I think kind of the backstory of it was is that ProLiance was a relatively strong candidate, and I don't know if that maybe they were getting down. Okay. If you notice, there's a little hesitation there. Larry's Skype or my Skype or whatever just shut off. So called him back. We'll jump back in, but thanks for your patience. I don't know what happened, but all right. So we had a little technical difficulties there. Skype just dropped us. I don't know. I'm sure it's operator error on Larry's part.
My hands are like away from the phone, and so I'm,
you didn't spill tea on your phone.
I didn't spill anything. I didn't drop anything. I didn't pull any plugs out. I'm not gonna take the blame for this one.
I'm not gonna lie. I don't think the Wi-Fi in our palatial estate here in Peoria is super strong, but it seems okay. Who knows? Skype is being a little weird. Anyway, so yeah. So I think what had happened with ProLiance is they were a candidate. I know that they were an initial candidate. Maybe they got down the road or not, but from what I was told, the decision, even they're still in negotiations with multiple companies, and that the decision on finalizing a deal with one of those companies won't happen for another 3 to 6 months. So I guess it won't be ProLiance Field. My dream of Wajamaya Field or Taco Time Field, so they could have Mexi fries in the press box every day, still lives on.
Well, I know a lot of people are still holding out for like Boeing Field or Starbucks grounds. Those would be interesting. Yeah, you know, it's going to be a corporation name. I mean, I saw a bunch of people tweeting like, "Oh, ProLiance Field, that's horrible." But I mean, I don't know what they're expecting, some lyrical name. I mean, it's going to be a company and just like Safeco is. Safeco is an insurance company. So, I don't know what would please people. I guess, you know, Boeing Field or something like that.
Well, everybody hated CenturyLink Field after it was Quest for a long time, and they got used to it, you know?
So. Yeah, no, that's very true. You do get used to it. You almost forget that Safeco is an insurance company and not a baseball stadium sometimes.
All right. So now it is, we're recording this the night of February 13th, Tuesday night. Pitchers and catchers report tomorrow for their physicals. They're very extensive physicals, which I have done, which they asked me if I wanted to do again, and I think I'm going to pass. And so tomorrow, like, everybody makes a big day about pitchers and catchers report day, but most of the players don't do anything. They just kind of hang out. They take their physicals. Because the Mariners' physical is so invasive and relatively stressful, they don't want them doing anything. The first full workout will be Thursday. So Thursday rolls around. What do you think I should be watching for out there?
Well, I think you want to look at Felix. I mean, that's always the big mystery of camp, and that even more so now is what kind of shape he's going to come in.
And what hairstyle?
What hairstyle? What you know, jewelry he might be wearing? I don't know if you'll get a glimpse, lay eyes on him tomorrow or not. But you know, or if he, well, one thing that Service stressed and you've written about is that this is not going to be the slow developing camp that's normal for Felix in the past, where he's been coming off 200 innings and they take him slow and he doesn't even barely pitch until the middle of spring training. He's going to be on the same schedule as everyone else, throwing bullpens right away, getting in games right away. And, you know, they feel like they have to use the full time of spring training to get him ready, and not just sleepwalk through the first 3 weeks and then get ready for the season. So you know, that'll be a big thing. But you know, Paxton,
I saw him today. I talked to him for a little bit today. He threw a bullpen today. You know, it's not to say best shape of his life, like Greg Johns and I were commenting, physically he does look a little different. Like, He's trimmed up even more. I asked him about it. He says, I weigh the same. He goes, I've just put the weight in a little bit better places than my stomach or something like that. So.
People like to mock the cliche of the best shape in your life, and I think people have studied, people have actually looked at what kind of years people have when in the years where there's stories about them being in the best shape of their life, and there's usually no correlation between that and then going on to have a good year. But I do think when a guy is visibly, fitter than he was the previous year, or more muscular or whatever, it can mean something. It can show that they're getting serious about things, or that they're maturing, or that they're stronger. And I do think it can play, it can really, it could have some significance of the, on the season they're going to have.
Well, I look at it this way. If they're willing to make that sort of commitment during the off season to prepare, then you got to figure that they're going to continue to prepare throughout the season in that regard. Like they've done all this work to get to the season, you just don't stop. Now, Felix did all that work last season, and then he got to the season and just let it stop, and that was part of the problem. But I think there was injuries and other stuff. So,
Felix is a fascinating guy this year. He really is. To me, on the of all the guys on the team, he is the most intriguing because he's the fallen star, the superstar who isn't anymore, and he's been humbled. And what will that? Where does he go next? Does that drive him to get back? Does he? Will he never get back? Are they chasing, fool's gold here and hoping that Felix can be a top of the line pitcher again? Can he stay healthy for a full year? I mean, much of their season to me hinges on the answers to those questions.
Yeah, it's weird. A year ago, or last off season, I wrote that 4,000-word opus on his off season and what it meant. And some of the consensus thought in talking with some of his teammates and former coaches and coaches is just that this is a guy that was always able to just kind of do it his way and maybe not have to give the maximum effort in the off season or have to do all the things that Jake Arrieta or some of those guys who are even Paxton doing the hot yoga, that he was just so supremely talented that he could just always do it, and that like he's still even at age 31, trying to figure out how to make that work. That when you just can't throw your glove on the field and be good, how do you respond? There have been a lot of guys like that. Ken Griffey Jr. did not like to do the workouts in the weight room, and that hurt him a little bit towards the end because physically your body breaks down, and a lot of people, if you don't consistently upkeep it, you're going to break down sooner than you should.
Yeah, Junior was the classic example of that, of a guy getting by on raw talent. And I mean, he was a physical specimen without really having to do much training. That's
Yeah.
just the, it was a God-given thing. There's a famous quote from Lou Piniella where he kind of laments that he didn't hit the weight room more, and that might have helped him later in his career if he had trained better. That's Felix is at a real crossroads. Has he been Has that hit home with him, or does he still think that those 2 years are aberrations and he could get that back? He's still young. He might still feel that it's not time to make a drastic change, even though everyone else does. And I would have to think that these last 2 years have sort of driven home to him that he's got to. I mean, this is not a new conversation. We've had this conversation for two straight off seasons. About his need to adjust, and he's not the same pitcher he was. I mean, this has been a talking point for a couple of years now. So, at some point, either he manifests that, or he's there's the troubles will continue, and pretty soon he won't be Felix Hernandez anymore, and people will stop thinking of him as that. And I think he's a prideful guy, and I know he's a prideful guy, and my thinking is that he'll take this to heart and do what it takes to be good again.
Yeah, I think the bigger thing is just understanding how you're going to do it in games and refining some command and learning how to attack hitters differently. And I mean, we talked pitching to contact. It's not just pitching to contact. It's just understanding to be more efficient. I mean, I think CeCe Sabathia has really learned that at an older age, how to be more effective in games when you don't have all the overpowering stuff. Now, he's left-handed, and I don't know what his velocity is. It's not overpowering either, but I mean, I certainly think he can get outs. I know talking with Bob Dutton, formerly of the TNT, and he had mentioned some scouts kind of compared Felix's current status to when Pedro Martinez was with the Mets. That, you know, there would be games where he'd look like the Pedro of old, and there'd be games where he'd be, you know, have to fight to get through five, and, you know, six was kind of the number and stuff like that. So maybe that's where he is. But, I mean, if the Mariners got 27 starts out of Felix, where he gave them 6 to 7 innings, they'd be plenty happy with that at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's lots of examples. You know, CeCe Sabathia is a good example. Oral Hershiser, you know, Frank Tanana, guys who were fireballers who adjusted and you know, Pedro, and became different pitchers. You know, his hero Freddy Garcia, who's apparently still pitching in the winter leagues in Venezuela, including this offseason at age 44, I think, certainly did that. So, whether he believes he needs to do that yet is the million-dollar question, I think.
Two more things on Felix. One on the hair situation. I saw like a Snapchat or Instagram video where he had paired to a, appeared to have twisted his hair into braids that were sneaking out of a beanie, and it was not a good look. But then I think that somebody mentioned that he had another video of him getting his head shaved tight. So we'll see tomorrow. Also, you know, Servais had mentioned all this stuff about Felix, you know, being on every same schedule. Now, that's predicated on whether he's thrown the requisite amount of times off the mound before showing up. Because if he hasn't, then he can't follow that schedule. He's going to be a little bit behind. I have not seen video of him throwing or whatever. You assume he has. I mean, his brother is a pitching coach within the organization and basically lives with them in the off season. So I would assume Felix has thrown, you know, been on his throwing program like he's supposed to. But, you know,
Well, if he hasn't, that's not a good sign.
Oh, no, no.
That's not a good sign at all.
I'll have something to write about, that's for certain.
Yeah, but that's just part of the reason why he's so, you know, you asked who to look for, what you should look for. This just adds to why Felix tops the list, because that's just another question, is how ready is he going to be? Has he been doing the off-season work? Has he been doing the throwing? Has he been doing the lifting and the fitness and the running and all that? You know, you probably have a good, pretty good idea tomorrow.
Yeah, I went in the clubhouse today. I got here Monday, and kind of hung out a little bit on Monday in the clubhouse. Saw a few guys, and then went in today. Saw most of the guys coming in and out. A lot of position players here already too. Mitch Haniger, who lives, I think, here in the off season. Well, I think he lives here in the off season, maybe not, but he's here already. Paxton got here on February 1st. So
Wow.
he got here on February 1st. Now, granted, he's been living in Wisconsin, in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, in the off season. So yeah, maybe, you know, given what the winter's been like up in the northern part of the country, he probably wanted to get here. But he's got here February 1st because he wanted to get his bullpen work and his throwing stuff outside and do his workouts outside. So he was pretty fired up, and that's a good sign too. Usually you don't beat Iwakuma here, but he did.
Well, yeah, you know, Paxton, he's pretty much proven everything except that he could stay healthy. You know, everybody knows what kind of pitcher he is, what kind of stuff he has, and he should be hitting the prime of his career now. You know, he's had to figure a few things out, and he's been erratic, but now he's at that point where, you know, experience and stuff should come together if he can stay healthy. You know, he should be an all-star caliber pitcher. So that's, you know, that's another huge key for the Mariners, is can they get the 30 starts out of him?
Yeah. Who else did I saw Mark. I saw, you know, Marco Gonzalez, and I don't know. They're all kind of around, some of the catchers. You know, I it's not as bad as in recent years where you were just begging for some of these relievers to sit at their in front of their lockers because you didn't
Yeah.
know who they are. As one of the clubbies goes, bunch of 6'2" bearded white dudes walking around.
Well, so someone will have to point out Nick Rumbelow to me, but
Yeah, he
most of
looks
the
pretty
other guys,
young.
most of the other guys I know.
He looks pretty young. Yeah, there's a few. I don't know. It's always interesting. Anything else I should be watching? What were you? What
Well,
would you be watching?
The clock, probably.
Yeah.
Well, how about, I mean, you know, the question of whether they will sign another guy. I mean, I wrote a column about that yesterday that they should. This is a broken record. But, I mean, those guys, unbelievably, they're all sitting there other than now Yu Darvish, but every other, I mean, the list of unsigned pitchers is just astonishing at this point of the year. Not just the biggies of you know, Arrieta and Lance Lynn and who's the other
Alex
big
Cobb.
one? Alex Cobb are still there, but you know, lesser guys like Cashner and Jaime Garcia and
Jason
Jason Vargas.
Vargas, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I made a list the other day of unsigned pitchers. I mean, some of them are unsigned for a reason and you wouldn't want to touch, but you know, Clay Buchholz, Trevor Cahill, Jeremy Hellickson, Ubaldo Jimenez, John Lackey, Francisco Liriano, Edinson Volquez, Annabelle Sanchez, Chris Tillman. You know, some of those guys are injured, some of those guys were terrible, some of those guys you wouldn't touch with a, you know, 10-foot pole, but almost all of them are going to get signed by somebody. And some of them are big name pitchers, and the Mariners, you know, it still baffles me why they're not going after an Alex Cobb or a Lance Lynn. But do you get any sense that they are? I mean,
No.
no, yeah, I mean, it is what it is,
Yeah,
you know.
that's, I don't know. I just don't see it.
So that puts a lot of, you know, Marco Gonzalez to me is a really a guy on the spot. You know, I guess I'd be looking at him and what you know, what his mindset is as the DePoto is staking a lot of his reputation on the 4 and 5 guys being as good as he thinks they're going to be, Erasmo and Marco. And Marco's a guy who's never really, you know, pitched a full season in the major leagues as a starter. So I mean, that's a hugely intriguing story as well.
I don't look. We've beaten this rotation thing to death. But it's like I said, we've always said it's not like you hate it or you think it's horrible. You just think it could be improved. And I don't want to hear these arguments of over a 1 year period. If you took 30 starts from Erasmo, you get 1.7 WAR versus, and that's what Alex Cobb is. Alex Cobb was ahead of Erasmo in their rotation. You know, he pitched through their rotation. He was an established guy. I mean, I don't think he's a world beater, but I think if you slide him in as your number three and you put Mike Leake as your number four, and then you choose between Erasmo and Marco as your five, and the other one goes in the bullpen as a long guy, you're better off. You just have a better rotation. And you have the depth if something were to go wrong with Felix or Paxton, because in the past it has.
Yeah, and I also don't buy the, you know, we don't want to block. We
Yeah.
feel like it's important to bring someone from our
Ah,
minor
that's.
league system. Like, first of all, Marco Gonzalez is not really from your minor league system. He's a guy you picked up in a trade in July, and if he's blocked, I mean, he's going to make the team probably as a bullpen guy. And you know, Andrew Moore, I mean, who are you blocking exactly by going out and getting somebody? There's really not anybody knocking down that door. There's very little pitching that's going to help them from the minor leagues this year. So, to me, this is the golden time to go get somebody from outside while you're building back up your surplus of major league ready future arms.
Yeah, because also Erasmo's a free agent after this year, so you'll have an opening. So it's like, you know,
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't necessarily know. I know. I gotta think money is some involved in this on some level. I mean, I know Jerry sold it, and I mean Jerry could sell ice to the Eskimos if he had to, but they have to. There has to be some financial, like, hesitancy here that they don't want to commit to this right now because it just doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, yeah, and maybe these guys, I mean, you know, Yu Darvish ended up getting 6 years. Okay, I fully understand why you don't give Yu Darvish 6 years, and I wouldn't give Arrieta 6 years either, which is, I'm sure, what he wants. But if you can get one of these guys for 3 years,
With an option, three at the
with an
vesting.
option, yeah, or maybe they get desperate and go 2 years with an option because they want to play baseball this year. you know, Jerry said at the luncheon that these guys are going to get a lot of money. You know, he said that even though the market is what it is and it's stalled, these guys are going to sign somewhere and they're going to get a lot of money. So, you know, maybe the Mariners, you know, there is an industry-wide sort of sea change here about giving, looking at past blunders that teams have made and giving guys at that age, particularly pitchers, long-term deals that they regret. And, you know, I could see that, but you know, at some point you need to get some pitching. And if it's, you know, don't give him 5 years, don't give him 6 years, but maybe 3 years, take a little gamble. You know, once again, I think this team is in a unique position of being really close to being a playoff caliber team, but you know, maybe they'll be proven right in the end, and the faith will be justified in these guys, and guys like Erasmo and Marco will outperform the guys that I'm advocating and you're advocating that they go out and sign, in which case they'll have the last laugh. But we'll see.
I mean, I think they'll try. If they, the one thing is like, if it doesn't work early, like what happened last year with Smiley or whatever, it's hard to make a trade in May for a pitcher, like a decent one. You know, maybe one of these guys still won't be signed. One thing is, I didn't realize this. Alex Cobb had a qualifying offer, so I know they're very hesitant to sign anybody with a qualifying offer. They don't want to give up the picks. If it's over $50 million, then you have to give up more. I
think you only have to give up your third best draft pick is what.
I thought it was if the contract went over a certain amount of dollars that it went up. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess I need to look at that a little bit more carefully. And yeah, that's a valid reason to think about it. But you know, another thing we've talked about is that it's going to be a hard year to make the playoffs with the Astros just maybe even getting Real Muto to catch, you know, filling one of their few weak positions if they make that deal. And then all of a sudden they're just loaded. I mean, they're a 100-win team, so that looks very dim. And then so you're vying for a wild card spot, and there's some really good clubs there that you're going to be competing with. So, you know, do you want to go another? You keep adding to that playoff drought, and that just becomes more and more of a talking point. You'd think you'd want to. To me, you'd think you'd want to solidify your rotation, but I guess they believe they have done that, and they did. You know, to be fair, they did go out and get 60% of their rotation was picked up in the second half of last season after the All-Star break. So, you know, Jerry believes he did it. He already did it. It's just he didn't do it in the off-season. He did it during the season. So. Again, we'll find out. We'll find out how wise all this is.
Here's the qualifying offer thing. If a team went over the luxury tax the season before, which the Mariners did not, it loses its second and fifth highest pick in next year's draft, and it loses $1 million from its international bonus pool. If a team receives revenue sharing, it loses its third highest pick. The fourth highest pick gets attached on. This is really weird. Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, basically they lose their third highest pick. So that's not horrible.
That's basically a third round pick, right? Yeah. I mean, maybe they have some
no,
other
I
ones,
think
but
they qualify for a compensatory. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess that's what they're gonna do, but it doesn't seem like it's gonna happen. I'd be surprised. One thing is, yeah, Yu Darvish for $126 million over 6 years with an opt out after 2 years. I mean, if you're the Mariners, you'd probably be begging him to opt out after two. But yeah. And, I mean, to be honest, it would have taken more than $126 million to get Yu Darvish to come to Seattle over Chicago. I just don't, you know. Yeah. It's a better built situation in Chicago for him. And you know.
Yeah. Well, opt-outs are invariably a bad deal for the team, because if the player's doing lousy, he's not going to opt out because he knows he won't get the money. And if he's doing great, he'll opt out because he'll get a better deal, and then you lose him. So it's really a lose-lose from the team standpoint.
Masahiro Tanaka did not opt out after a pretty decent year. Maybe he was smart given what you were seeing happen at the free agent market too.
Yeah, you know, all the guys who signed early are looking, you know, are looking better. You know, I'm sure Carlos Santana is glad he grabbed that deal that he did early on in this process while looking at other guys. I mean, if I were somebody like Logan Morrison or Lucas Duda or one of the many first basemen still out there, I'd be getting a little panicky right now. Like, you know, when the musical chairs stops, not that many teams need first basemen. Where are you, you know, where are you going to end up playing?
Yeah, well, the Mariners might need one, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah. Ooh, there's a tease.
Yeah, maybe. You never know. Yeah, it's pitchers and catchers. Like, for fans, I mean, it is kind of, I won't say it's boring, because it's, you know, the one thing is they don't have, there's no Thiago Vieira. You remember how giddy I was every time Thiago Vieira would throw, like, a bullpen session? I would just,
oh, yeah.
I'd be standing behind there with my video and just all excited. They don't have that guy. I mean, Diaz throws pretty hard, obviously. That Matt Festa guy, I think, Art Warren is the one.
Yeah, those two guys, those are two names that I keep, you know, they keep popping up now on the top 10 list that I really know very little about, so I'm kind of interested in seeing them. But, yeah, they're not 102 like, you know, Vieira was, no. 103 or...
And it wasn't just like the how fast it was the weird, violent delivery that Vieira had. I mean, he was a huge man, and he was like he was thrown at the carnival at one of those speed gun things.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the fun of spring training is seeing those guys, like, and the big, you know, the big sluggers that, you know, from past years that can hit the ball a mile when they hit it until they start throwing curveballs.
The William O'Peñas of this world.
Exactly, the William O'Peñas and the Pedro Serranos of the world. So,
yeah. Other than that, though, I mean, obviously, you're going to watch to see what David Phelps and how he's, you know, if he's limited at all. Tony Zick, end of the season on the DL, he looks like Grizzly Adams right now. His beard is, I mean, that's way for me to skew old there, but his beard is just immense.
Well, the other one is, I mean, Juan Nicasio, the one new arm that they have, you know, Service has mentioned many times what a physically imposing guy he is and just how big he is. So, you know, always want to look at the new guy. I mean, he's going to play a big role on this team. They're counting on this power bullpen being, you know, all these power arms one after another that they could throw out there, and Nicasio's a key to that to get to Eddie D. So we'll see how that works out.
Yeah, I guess I'll watch a little bit of Zunino too. I'm trying to. This deal where I follow Zunino around for an entire day. The Mariners are hoping to let me do that. I think Mike's got to agree to it, but Mike's usually a pretty good dude about that stuff. So.
Yeah. I wouldn't agree to let you follow me around all day, but I hope Mike does.
Yeah, it's not like I'm following around from his house and everything. It's just like from the time he gets there and stuff like that.
No, I understand. I like those kind of stories.
Following the kid into the bathroom or anything, you know. So I don't know. It was kind of just about how they prepare. So I was looking to do something on Zunino, Haniger, Paxton, Nelson, obviously, because that guy's a freak, but somebody else.
What do you think about the backup catcher situations, which is one of the few position battles that we have, Marjama and Freitas? Do you think it'll be one of those two, or do you think they'll pick up somebody?
I mean, I guess they could, like, if they don't like what they see from those two right now, there's probably a couple catchers out there. I met Freitas today, Freitas or Freitas, I'm standing in the clubhouse, and I was talking with Zick, and all of a sudden he's a pretty big dude, like pretty muscular dude, walks up and goes, "Hi, I'm David." And I was like, "I'm not a player, but good to meet you." And then
thought you were a Rasmo, probably.
No, I told him who I was with and everything, and probably because I had a big credential on my neck. But he goes, and the odd thing is, so, like, how does it work when you're media? When do you have to come down here and stuff? I don't know how this stuff works. I was like, oh, yeah, well, let me tell you, David.
Well, you can always tell a guy who's new to his career when he's actually interested in the
media.
Media. Yeah. That'll end quickly.
Yeah. So, I mean, from what I've been told, Freitas – might have the advantage because he's the better receiver, the better blocker, the better thrower, which is what you usually want, from your backup catcher. I mean, Marjama is a has some hitting talent, but I don't know.
Marjama really went all in, though. He did the caravan all winter and did a lot of promotion for the team and was tweeting constantly about
Well, and he went to winter ball this year to work on some of the defensive things that they asked him to. And so,
yeah.
I
Now
mean,
he's a yeah, he's it'll be interesting. You kind of root for both of them because they're both like trying to put get their foot in the door in the major leagues after kind of kicking around the minor leagues. So
the one thing is, and they want somebody that can handle pitching staff because last year with Carlos Ruiz, they couldn't ever catch him when James Paxton pitched because he just couldn't, he struggled with the velocity. He struggled when he had to catch Diaz and a couple of the other harder throwers down the stretch. And so they want to make sure that, whoever they have as the backup can handle some of these power arms late in the game. Or if, I do think that any time, and they'll set it up that any time that, Paxton pitches, Zunino's going to catch him. But I mean, you don't want to have that. We saw that happen with John Buck that one year where they got rid of him because he just couldn't catch velocity anymore. It happens to those guys when they get in their late 30s.
Who was that really old catcher that they brought here? The guy, he looked like he was about 50 years old.
Oh, Henry Blanco, Hank
Henry
White.
Blanco, yeah,
Hank
Hank White.
White.
Yeah, he
That
was
was
a
the we really don't like Kelly Schaap because he's a bad human, so we're going to find anybody. We'll get rid of him and find anybody to just be a good guy to Zunino and not to just teach Zunino all these bad habits. And they brought in Hank White, who looked a lot like, I don't know, he reminded me of Danny Trejo from those movies, just, but he was like the nicest guy in the world, although like his he had like this really stern face, but when you talked to him, he was the nicest guy in the world. He had a granny that year.
No, I remember that. Yeah, no, I thought he had a lot of character in his face. He was
Yeah.
like an interesting looking guy
Oh
with,
yeah.
etched
The calmness.
countenance.
Oh, the calmness.
Yes.
You can see the lines of 30 years of baseball in Hank White's or
I
in
might have
Henry
written that.
Blanco's
I might have
face.
written that.
Yes.
Well, how much are they going to try and milk out of Zunino? I mean, how what's a realistic expectation? You don't see catchers catching 140 games anymore just because
No.
of the wear and tear. I would think that would there's going to be a temptation to do that, I think, particularly if he's hitting, continues to hit. But I think they got to limit it to maybe 130 at most.
Yeah, I think 130 would be ideal. The one thing that helps them this year is they have all those off days, especially early, but I don't know. We'll see. But you also can't just let your backup catcher rot and never use him. You got to get him out there so he can handle some of it. So we'll see what they do. I mean, like I said, if Freitas and Marjama look terrible early in camp, they could go out and get a guy. I guess they have Tuffy Goswich, as well, but they could always go out and find a guy.
That's the sort of thing that sometimes you get 2 days before the season when everybody cuts down
Yeah.
and there's a an experienced catcher who's cut loose numbers game with another team, and suddenly he's your backup catcher after having this battle all spring. I've seen that, over the years. It happens quite frequently.
So the are you gonna have to go to Florida to cover Russell Wilson with the Yankees?
That has not come up yet. I don't think so. That's
You love the Florida trip. You love going down there. I mean, if I told you right now, you would you're going to do the Florida trip, I bet you could come up with 15 column ideas, couldn't you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I would jump at the opportunity, but I think those days, frankly,
Oh
I
yeah.
think those days are over.
If I
I don't
told
know.
you, if I told you, you get 4 days, to cover in Florida, but two of them have to be spent covering Russell at the Yankees, what would you say?
I'd say bring it on.
You're lying. You're lying so badly.
I would negotiate for one day covering Russell and one day the Yankees as a team just fascinate me because I just
Yeah, I
I mean
mean,
we I they're just, I talked about this last week, but I think they're the best team in baseball right now.
so yeah, I mean, I guess if you spent 2 days at New York and Yankees and then you need 1 day covering like the real stuff and then 1 day having to endure the Russell nonsense, I guess. As someone who's covered the Russell thing, it is It is mind-numbing, and it makes me want to put my head in a vise just thinking about it. But
Well, the
people ate
problem
it
is, as far
up.
as the people, yeah, they did. But the problem is, when they were in Surprise, and you're in Peoria, you could wait till they say, oh, he's going to be available tomorrow, and make the drive. Not knowing exactly when he's going to be in Tampa, Florida, is a little more complicated because they never announce these things until maybe the day before with Russell, because I don't think they have to work around his schedule and everything, so it's hard to schedule a trip around Russell Wilson's appearance because I don't think they know the date of it, and you can't just go to Florida and sit there and wait like you could wait for him to show up in Surprise when he was with the Rangers.
I really made him unhappy that year when I covered it, 'cause like you go there and you've got people from MLB.com and some other people just go, oh, and some TV people, oh, Russell, what do you think? Do you think you miss playing baseball and all this and that? And I wasn't gonna write that. We'd already, we've already done that before. Brewer had to cover it one time, So I called Bob Condotta and I said, give me some football specific questions since Russell's here that you think I should ask him. So I fired off like six football questions, and they were like ones about Marshawn's contract status, Jimmy Graham, his contract and all that. Obviously, he never answers any questions with other than like listing his teammates and using all cliches. But you could just tell he's like, who the hell is this guy? And why does he keep asking me Seahawks questions? I
Yeah,
was
but
like, look, I know, I'm.
he never ever betrays any or shows any annoyance. I don't think I've ever seen, in all the interview sessions I've sat through with him, which are in the dozens now. I've never seen him annoyed or upset at a question visibly.
Well, that's because he knows no matter how bad the question or how tough the question is, he's not going to answer it in any way that he feels like he wants to. He's just going to, like I said, list off his teammates. And, football's a really hard game. In the National Football League, you're just trying to win football games. So.
It feels the same, it doesn't matter whether you're playing high school or NFL, it's still 100 yards and whatever it is wide. He knows what it is. I can't remember, but yeah, that's it. The cliches come a flying with him.
If you could, would you? You know what would be interesting too about that Florida thing is if you could go down to that free agent camp and cover it, because that
Yeah,
would be a.
I just read today they're not allowing media,
No, you have to
which
like sit outside in the parking lot and wait for these guys.
yeah, that's talk about humiliating.
Well, that's. I was talking with a couple Yankees guys, and also I need to know this now while we're here. You haven't joined the Athletic in the time that the podcast started, have you?
No, I think you and I are the only two writers in America who have not been who have not yet signed up with the Athletic.
Yeah, well, I don't like their younger beat writers. They all wear skinny jeans. I don't really fit in that mold. And
Maybe they might need some token old people, but
yeah, you
no.
never. Well, they got gammons. Come on.
That's true. That's
But
true. No, I'm
you're
I
not.
see no I see no plans to leave my fine job that I enjoy at the Seattle Times.
Well, that script Seattle Times columnist thing that you got tattooed on your back would be kind of a problem.
Right.
No, so anyways, I was talking to Andy McCullough, who used to cover the Yankees, and he was telling me that like when you go down to the Yankees camp, like early on, the way it's set up, a lot of the players work over on the minor league fields, and the media isn't allowed on the minor league fields, so the media has to stand in the parking lot and wait for these guys to drive out and then try and interview them from the parking lot. I mean.
Well, I went to the Yankee game, unless it's changed, and I haven't been in 4 or 5 years, but I went for about 15 years in a row. I did the Florida trip, and I didn't never missed a Yankees. I wrote about the Yankees every single year, and I never had to do that. They were always there. So,
This is, I think, but this is, I think, before like the official report
oh
dates when they're down there.
yeah. Those guys could go like a week before everybody else and start reporting.
It's
So.
like a contest between the Red Sox and Yankees who can get down there, the reporters who can get down there faster. Like I think Pete Abraham got there in like December.
Yeah, no, I know. They make several trips. They go early, and they do try and one up each other. Because God forbid if Hanley Ramirez should give an interview and you don't get it in the in the parking lot. So, Yeah, there is some benefits for working in a market like ours where
Well, I mean,
that's
it's just
not.
like it's so, because it's never about the baseball a lot of times. It's just like, oh, I talked to him, you didn't, kind of.
Exactly. Yeah, right.
And
Exactly.
even if you get nothing out of it, it's just like, oh, I talked to him today, so.
And then, the Red Sox and Yankees fans are voracious. They eat that stuff up. And I don't think it's going to change. Both those teams are, playoff contending teams, and I would think that the interest in both of them are huge right now. So
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Are they going to sign JD Martinez?
I think, the Red Sox have been the logical spot for him all along, but I mean, he wants, what is it? I mean, like 7, 6 years, I think. I'm not sure if I would, maybe even longer. I was listening to MLB Network today, or MLB Radio today, and they were talking about how Hosmer wants 8 years. He's a
Yeah.
good ball player, but I wouldn't give Eric Hosmer 8 years. I'm sorry.
No, I wouldn't. JD Martinez is 30. So you
Yeah.
give him 5, he's going to be 35 in the last year.
And he's only become a star the last couple of years,
No.
really. I mean, he's had some really good seasons, but I wouldn't put him up as an upper echelon superstar, really. He can't play defense. He can hit. He'll get a good contract, but I don't. I think a lot of teams are just coming to the realization that these insane contracts just aren't to their benefit. The player side is screaming collusion, and I am usually I lean towards the players in these arguments over management, over ownership. But I have to admit that I think there is something to just the notion of fiscal sanity and smart GMs who look at analytics now and know that what the decline of players is, and not wanting to pay for the decline. And I think that has more to do with this impasse than anything.
If you're because of that, if you're a player now, are you more willing to do the Longoria and get a decent, like, 60 or 70 million early, like early in your career?
I
Because
think
you,
so.
I mean, that's,
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's, it's a risk for both sides, because Longoria left millions on the table. So did Andrew McCutchen and others. Mike Trout probably did, by signing the long-term deal early. But
But he's financially
sometimes,
set, though, still.
yeah, no, I know it, and I think a lot of players will look at what happened this winter and say, I don't want to go through that. And so maybe it behooves me to do that, unless you're a Bryce Harper or a Manny Machado or Clayton Kershaw, who, they don't have to worry about the market for them, I don't think.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's ever a guy that all these rules don't apply to, it's Bryce Harper, because he's so young, and Machado too. I mean, they're entering free agency at age, what, 26 or 27? So
Yeah.
it's not like that. So you can't use that argument against them. They're not even in their prime yet. So they're gonna have huge paydays, and they neither of them took these offers to get them past free agency. They didn't want any part of it. But if you're a guy who's not such a sure thing, I would think you'd definitely have to listen to that even more so.
Oh yeah, because you, I mean, even because if you do it early. If you do it early, and then, you can still play it out, bet on yourself. Look, I got this money, but if I play it out to free agency, I could still get money then. But I've already gotten,
Yeah.
life changing money.
Mike Trout is a classic example of that. I mean, he signed a life-changing deal when he was, what, 3 years into it, and he'll be a free agent in a couple of years, and he'll still be the best player in baseball, and he'll still set a contract record, no doubt. So, if he stays healthy. So, yeah, there's an example of a guy who's going to get it both ways for sure.
Well, it'll be interesting. Let's see what they do there. All right. Well, I think we've gone long enough. I can't believe you're not coming down the first column, and I see is going to be the redhead Matt Calkins. Usually, because of your son, you always come down early.
I think maybe I explained it, but I like to bring my son to spring training. It's a kind of a father-son bonding thing that we have, and we would always go during midwinter break, which was next week. And lo and behold, he's not in school anymore. He's not in high school anymore. So that's he's in college now, so he's not going to be coming. And so I can come any dang time I please. So I'm coming a little bit later. I always miss the games. I would come, when it was just the workouts, and I kind of miss seeing the games. And so I'm coming a little bit later this year.
Oh, yes. And because you're coming later, I get to go to Las Vegas for 3 days, so I thank you for that.
Yeah, I'm gonna actually go back to my roots and be the beat writer for 3 days while you're in Vegas living it up.
Yes,
And
it's a really difficult job, let me tell you.
I just want to hear the stories of
Yeah.
the group. Just about every media person in Seattle, except for me, is gonna be living it up in Vegas. So that's gonna be. I'm sure there's gonna be stories.
The 1 year when I went and you had to cover for me, remember Hudson got hurt again. Like he re-injured himself after we had all the stuff we were gonna do on him, and he got hurt again. That was not a fun one.
There's going to be a huge trade or something just because you're not there. It's going to be, I'm going to be, I'm sure I'm going to have some huge story dropped in my lap.
Well, I'm also thankful that you and your son aren't coming because that means I don't have to play catch with your son and throwing batting practice for 3 straight days and lift with him. I mean, I was in like damn near, I couldn't walk for like a week after that. 3 days of working out with your son, or 4 days, I think, has killed me.
He loves Uncle Ryan, though. I'm not even kidding. I think you're his favorite adult. I think you're over. You rank over me.
Well, that's because I'm not really an adult. That's why I'm his favorite. You're not worried about Calkins stealing all your good story ideas?
Well, yeah, there's not that many to go around, so it's going to be interesting to see what's left. But then you can then you by the time the games start, you can double around and start doing them again because you start to see them in action. There'll be an early Felix story, but then I'm sure there'll be another Felix column to be written once he starts pitching against the live competition. And I'll come up with something.
Oh yeah, you always do. All right, you still haven't signed with the Athletic yet, have you?
Oh,
Okay, just checking. I mean, because I don't know if I can deal with my entire timeline being flooded with tweets about you. I mean, it was a lot today. I'm not gonna lie. Look, the Athletics, a lot of those guys are my friends, especially like all the younger beat writers. I went to dinner with Pedro Mora and Trent Rosecrans the other night. There's a group of about 7 of us that's one of the best parts about spring training is when we all get together and go have dinner somewhere. We went and it was fun hearing about those guys, but man, that was a lot of tweets about the Athletic today. It was just a lot for me.
Yeah, there's a lot of self-congratulatory tweeting going on, which gets a little grating. It really reminds me, you weren't around then because you're young, but in the late 80s, early 90s, when the Nationals started, which
Oh
was a
yes, Frank DeFore.
national, Frank DeFord, and it was very, very similar. They just combed newspapers and tried to put together this superstar staff to form a national sports section, and it was a great idea. And the we look back now at the talent that they amassed, it was incredible. I mean, it's like guys who are now like superstars right and left, and it didn't work because they never figured out how to distribute the thing, and the distribution problems were just massive. And so now everything's on the internet, so that's not a problem. So it'd be interesting to see if this works. I mean, it's the first really big national venture since the National, and we'll see if technology has changed enough to allow it to work, and if there's enough of a market and enough people willing to pay for it. So we'll see.
I was just checking. You're gonna miss that little get together that where they all the beat writers meet up on that rooftop bar in Phoenix. It's next week, so.
Oh yeah, well, I usually make it because that's when I'm there, but You'll just have to go on without me.
I have to take Calkins. That could be dicey.
Just make sure that he doesn't get too close to the edge. You know, high up.
They have that upstairs pool there, too, as well.
Oh, God. The mind is racing here, trying to envision the scenarios. But all right, go to bed.
Yeah, we'll discuss Pete's fish and chips next week.
Oh, yum. Okay.
All right. Take it easy, man.
Okay.
That'll do it for this week's Extra Innings podcast here at the Seattle Times. Thanks to Larry Stone for coming on and talking with us. Sorry about the technical difficulties again, but hopefully we'll have that all ironed out. I may actually have Matt Calkins on next week since he'll be here in Peoria. Maybe we'll discuss it a little bit. We'll see. Thanks, as always, to Midnight Salvage Company, the official house band of the Extra Innings podcast, for all the bumpers and lead-in music. And thanks to you guys for listening. As always, if you need to get a hold of me, my email address is rdivish@seattletimes.com. Hit me up on Twitter at Ryan Divish or on Facebook on my professional page under my name. And we'll talk to you soon.